A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly donation to WBAI. Once you join, you'll receive a BAI buddy card and a free tote bag. The BAI buddy card allows you to become eligible for on-air giveaways and receive discounts at local shops, museums, and venues. And that's not even the best part. You can get all of this and more by donating as little as $10 a month.
That sounds amazing. I want to become a BAI buddy. How can I join?
You can sign up at WBAI.org.
WBAI.org? Got it. Thanks. And you're right, I can do a lot more at WBAI than with Kylie Jenner.
It's all about supporting a medium that keeps it 100.
I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Thank you. Where are my people? Now, where are my people? 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 Human. I'm talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something.
Night shift.
Dark gliding shapes.
What did you see?
There was a lot of light.
What was it?
That's all I remember.
There's something wrong with you. You know that?
Night.
That's an invisible barrier. Dark gliding shape.
keeps anyone from getting out. It's designed to keep me inside, but it keeps everyone else in too. I'm sorry. Shift again. I'll be damn late.
We're live. Night shift again.
I'll be damn late.
That, sir, is illogical.
That was the kind of world we'd made. World we'd made. World we'd made. World we'd made.
Sometimes I just don't understand human behavior.
Education doesn't make you happy, and nor does freedom. We don't become happy just because we're free, if we are, or because we've been educated, if we have, but because education may be the means by which we realize we are happy. It opens our eyes, our ears, tells us where delights are lurking, convinces us that there is only one freedom of any importance whatsoever, that of the mind, and gives us the assurance, the confidence, to walk the path our mind, our educated mind, offers.
You have to believe. If you don't, you go to hell. You have to believe.
Hello, Mr. Guest.
Oh, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
You're doing quite well. So, we have a jam-packed show this morning. We have a theme. We have special guests. We have interviews. We have stories. We have Life is Like Science Fiction. And we have enough to convince you that the world is definitely not what it seems. Yes.
I didn't think that it was.
Yes. Well, see, now you'll find out that you are in the Matrix. So part of the theme of tonight is embracing your dark side.
Okay.
We're going to discuss it. In psychology, it's called the shadow self. Are you aware of this?
No, but I can imagine that I have a strong shadow self.
Well, I'm going to tell you what that is, okay? In Jungian psychology, the shadow, the id, or the shadow aspect archetype may refer to an unconscious aspect of the personality, which the conscious ego does not identify in itself. Do you understand that first sentence?
Well, I do think that I'm very nice, so yeah.
Okay, in general, your outward self, okay. Or two, the entirety of the unconscious, i.e. everything that which a person is not fully conscious. In short, the shadow is the dark side, because one tends to reject or remain ignorant of at least desirable aspects, the least desirable aspects of one's personality. Mm-hmm. The shadow is largely negative. There are, however, positive aspects that may also remain hidden in one's shadow, especially in people with low self-esteem, anxieties, and false beliefs, which is an interesting term.
False beliefs, like delusions?
Well, false beliefs is just, it's an interesting, you know, term. It depends if you're coming, if you're speaking from reality and someone believes in things that are false and you are the one who has the lock on reality, then you can claim someone has false beliefs. Anyway, contrary to Freudian definition of shadow, the Jungian shadow can include everything outside of the light of consciousness and may be positive or negative. Everyone carries a shadow, he wrote, and the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. So in other words, the nicer the person is, the darker the shadow self. Just keep that in mind, Mr. Guest. It says it may be in part one's link to more primitive animal instincts, which are superseded during early childhood by the conscious mind. So, I want you to let that sink in. It says there's a book that I'm going to discuss a little bit. I have one of the authors of. I'm going to play some excerpts from. And this is a fairly established philosophy that you may or may not be aware of, mystery guest. It's called The Shadow Effect is the book. And
okay.
This book in particular, the subtext is Illuminating the Hidden Power of Your True Self. And it's by Deepak Chopra, Debbie Ford, and Marianne Williamson. But speaking of the shadow self, okay, there is a shadow co-host this morning with us. So that's what we're going to be talking about. I have an interview with the composer of the new film, A Quiet Place, which is the number one film in the country right now. That's Marco Beltrami. So I have some those excerpts from Marianne Williamson. I also, I'm going to ask specifically from you, mystery guest, and from the shadow co-host here, to tell me not only about your shadow self or what you know, but I'm going to ask you to tell me a revenge story. Like when you actually got revenge. It could be when you were a child.
So. Wow.
And then we're going to have people, they can call and tell us their revenge stories. But that is the theme.
Think of a good one. One that makes me look nice.
One that makes you look... So welcome.
Thank you.
So oh. I just explained to her what the shadow self is. Are you familiar with the shadow self?
Claro que sí.
Okay, so he is.
Say no more.
And then my question to you is, and I started to ask the mystery guest, but have you embraced your shadow self? And is that something that you actively try to embrace?
No, I have not. And indeed, I'll tell you this story.
Okay.
My best friend of many years, and we had just met. He's a wise man. He said to me, You know, something about having a dark side. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I grew up as a really hardcore Christian, and so I thought the world really worked that way. Even when I came here, I thought the world worked that way.
With, like, the Christian setup?
Like, if you just follow those rules, everybody will respond in the proper ways, and things will go your way, and it'll be all good. Anyway, so me with that
poly... Those were what they call false beliefs. We talked about this
earlier. Indeed, we have learned now, one of us at least. But at the time, my friend who knew better than I, who was at least a generation, maybe a generation and a half older than I, and who knew, he said to me something about having a dark side. He said, oh, he was an alcoholic. And he said to me, I'm an alcoholic because I can't stand the thoughts in my own head, the darkness inside of myself.
Interesting.
And I was like,
Interesting.
And he said, you know, everybody has a dark side. And I was like, I don't. And he goes, Tony, everyone has a dark side.
Okay, now I'm just going to go back to the part I read here, then the definition. It says here that everyone carries a shadow, and the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is.
And that's the...
That's the Jungian philosophy.
Yeah, the Jungian, not the Freudian.
That's not the Freudian. This is the Jungian philosophy. So that means the nicer you are, the darker your dark side is.
Don't get me angry.
I'm just telling you, that's what it says.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Clearly,
they should turn that into the title of a musical song.
Well, it is. It is a musical, practically. So it says that. So basically, that's the unconscious aspect. And I was talking a little bit about a book a few years back on WBAI. I read the book, and then I had two of the authors on. I had Debbie Ford and Marianne Williamson on.
I remember very well.
You remember that?
We went to a party with
Ford. Yes, we did.
Back in the day.
Ms. Ford, who has passed on. And so I have a couple excerpts from the Marianne Williamson, which she talks about what the shadow is, what that shadow effect is. And we're going to take calls, too, if people can talk about, you know, either embracing it or at the very least, I think people... You know, you can say some people, you know, they're an ugly drunk, you know, or they did something out of character. Or maybe they got revenge, because I think that's a way for the darkness to come out. What do you think?
Listen, my darkness has certainly come out through revenge.
So you know, he gave me that face that looks like I do revenge very well.
No, yeah, you know, I'm not proud of it, but I have done it. And it, you know, I'm that personality that is very kind and genteel. And when you push past that button,
once
you turn that on,
you preach it to the choir. Because I believe, like, when somebody really tries to screw with you, you don't fight back; you destroy them. That's just destroy them. And I have some stories. I have a couple of revenge stories. Like, got them. I have a couple I can reveal.
I'm not proud of mine.
You have to tell one. Okay. I mean, you don't have to tell it right away. I'll let you ease into the morning here. And maybe
this
the Mr. Guest.
It's quite frightening, sir.
Well, that's the whole point. If it wasn't frightening, then you would know that you weren't growing. That's the only time you grow is when you get frightened.
Like, I have butterflies in my stomach. And
it's growing.
I've been doing this for some time.
Well, first of all, let me just tell you this. I'll help you out, okay? Because Psychology Today has two separate articles on why revenge is good for the human. Why it's good. Now, I'm going to let the mystery get
Learn me, one. Learn me.
That's right. This is three reasons why revenge and forgiveness is okay. And forgiveness is easy. Are you ready for this one, Mr. Guest?
I'm ready.
Okay. I should just hit it and it should just go, but it's not just going. But you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI.
It's the best radio station.
99.5 FM.
In New York City.
why revenge is okay. Why forgiveness is easy. For Japanese makake monkeys, status is important. If a high status makake bites a low status makake, the low status monkey will not attack back. The risk is too great, but stick around and you might observe something interesting. Every once in a while, one of those bullied low status makakes finds a weaker relative of that high status bully. It doesn't always happen.
Sounds like government.
It doesn't always happen 5 minutes later, an hour later, or even a day later. These are long-term memory monkeys who know how to hold a grudge.
Long-term memory monkeys.
Who know how to hold a grudge.
With that, I've encountered some in my life, just so you know.
But once they find the bully's weaker relative, they will attack. And they won't embark on this attack late at night when nobody is watching. The attack will take place right in front of that same high-status makake who once hurt them. It's as if that low-status makake is saying, "Listen, I know you are stronger than me, have more allies than me, and could squash me any time you want, but I know how to hurt you, so it's best that you leave me alone in the future. Revenge. It is not the province of evildoers. It is how creatures maintain order in a social system."
Oh, I'm going to use that.
It is only...
It's not revenge. I'm just maintaining order in the social system.
It's not the province of evildoers.
Very sort of gibberish.
It's how creatures maintain order in a social system. I'm just maintaining order.
That's right. I maintain... Listen, I'm sorry. I keyed your car.
Maintaining order.
I'd ask this. Maintaining order. Yes. Are we not better than monkeys?
Clearly not, okay? Because a lot of what this sounds like, it sounds like the schoolyard. It sounds like prison.
But schoolyard, certainly. Prison, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But can't we make higher choices in schoolyards and prisons?
We have better... art and faster cars.
Democrats and Republicans.
At least. What? Wait, we know that was a really... What, the mystery guest
monkeys
is smart.
Monkeys in space.
Yes, she is.
The mystery guest is smart.
Yes, she is. And it's a mystery. How she got so smart, we really don't know.
Well,
so, go ahead, please. I want to hear how... Is that reason number one, because of this keeping the social order?
Well, there are a few things that I should read out here.
Okay,
please.
I'm ready.
I'll just try to get through them all. It is only in an evolutionary blink of an eye that human beings had governments, court systems, police officers, and prisons to offer safety and security in theory. Before a court system ensured that people followed through with promises stated in contracts, social order was maintained by a combination of kindness and the threat of vengeful acts. Respond to a few bad deeds with unrelenting vengeance, and you would gain a reputation as a bad... Where's the sign? Ass. I can say that, right?
You better find the sign before you ask the question.
The sign is hiding. This reputation ensured...
I have a sign there. Who hit it?
I think it might be flipped around behind that chair over there.
Flipped around.
It's sort of hiding. But I found it.
Dangerous words.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous. Very dangerous. The reputation ensured... responsible behavior much better than firm handshakes, good eye contact, and a well-executed power pose. Acts of vengeance, or acts of revenge, are part of our evolutionary birthright. Those Japanese makake monkeys often act like a lot like humans. Just as there is nothing uniquely human about revenge, there is nothing uniquely human about forgiveness. After being hurt by someone's wrongdoing, what leads humans, monkeys, whales, or dolphins to choose forgiveness over revenge?
Wait, whales and dolphins?
Whales, dolphins, monkeys, and humans.
I want to know what dolphin revenge is. What is dolphin revenge?
Dolphin, well, you have to allow me to continue.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm sorry.
There are three factors that increase the likelihood you will forgive instead of avenge a transgression. Three factors. One, careworthiness. the easier it is to adopt another person's psychological point of view, the easier it is to forgive them. Call it empathy, perspective taking, or any other name. What is important is that you appreciate why another person is worthy of being forgiven. On the biological level, it's about genetic relatedness. It's easy to forgive a child. It is such a mundane act to allow a child, our child to transgress upon us and let it go, that it doesn't feel right to dignify this with the word forgiveness. If you have kids, they will leave a piece of fruit to rot in the sofa. They will use crayons to decorate the wall. They will eat all the bacon before the skillet is turned off. Is your willingness to show benevolence to these harmful acts a sign of forgiveness? Certainly, but it is effortless because they are oozing in careworthiness. Your romantic partner is a mere fraction of this ease. Your siblings a mere fraction. Your close friends a bit smaller, and as we move further away from your core group, forgiveness might proceed a little slower, requiring a little more effort. 2. Safety. When you feel as if you can trust a person, then it becomes easier to forgive. When an organization makes it explicit that transgressions are unacceptable, and a greater sense of protection will be provided from here on out, then a forgiving attitude starts to be woven into the culture.
So like the Me Too movement will start to forgive at some point.
I don't think that's what this is saying between the lines.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, our ability to forgive is proportional to the degree that we are confident harm will not arise in the future. And our society needs, our security needs are taken seriously. So no, I don't think forgiveness amidst the Me Too movement is a part of.
Well, but part according of that. To this, read that last section you read there where
the
it says
section reason number two reasons yes. why yeah, it's easier to forgive.
Yes. Read that to me again.
Safety. When you feel as if you can trust a person, and this is on the individual level.
Okay, but they go on. Go ahead.
Okay. When you feel as if you can trust a person, then it becomes easier to forgive. When an organization
yes.
makes it explicit that transgressions are unacceptable, and a greater sense of protection will be provided from here on out, then a forgiving attitude starts to be woven into the culture. But I mean, there's a lot to be said in that.
Okay. All right.
Are you editorializing now?
Yes.
I'm inserting comments.
Let's be clear. End
Let's
quote.
Editorialize.
Editorializing. With yeah. that last sentence.
Use a different voice, though, when you editorialize.
Our ability.
Or just say unquote.
Our ability to forgive is proportional to the degree that we are confident harm will not arise in the future, and our security needs are taken seriously. So safety, that's important.
That's okay. And is the third reason now?
Future benefit.
The future benefit of revenge.
The future benefit of forgiveness. This is why, these are three reasons why it's easier to forgive.
Than give revenge.
Three factors that increase the likelihood you will forgive instead of avenge a transgression. The first one is careworthiness, empathy, being able to forgive a child.
Okay, for leaving that fruit.
In the sofa.
All right, I'm with that.
Okay. And that point also went on to explain yes. that the further people become removed from your core group, the more, you know, criteria you're going to give them. For forgiveness, for your forgiveness.
So in other words, like you might shoot up a bunch of people in a school, they'll take you to lunch, but if you have your cell phone, they might kill you. It's different criteria.
What?
No, I know what you're saying in a way, but I don't, it's going to take me a minute to really
process that. Okay.
Process that.
You have to listen back tomorrow.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to listen back, but I think I know what you're saying when you're, you know, core group, you know, and this is assuming that the person or organization that's forgiving is, you know, a certain type of person or organization. And, you know, that the transgressors are, you know, clearly defined into types. So I get what you're saying. That makes sense. But I don't think that has to do with empathy. And this article is citing careworthiness or empathy as the reason for opting for forgiveness. So yeah, I don't think that's what you're talking about. Safety, future benefit. That might have more to do with what you're talking about. Future
and what's benefit. This is the final
future
reason.
Future benefit, yeah. In deciding whether to let go of a grudge, we take into account whether we will get something in return. There is nothing wrong with this. At some point in the development of the self-help section of bookstores, our culture vilified the notion of selfishness. Selfishness became the goal. It is worth revisiting these black and white categories to appreciate the beauty of gray. Selfishness means caring about our welfare. Being selfish does not mean you are quarrelsome. It means that you take care of your needs, which often means being loving and generous toward cherished people in your life. Take ownership of this mindset and you are more likely, not less likely, to be forgiving.
So in other words, you can be selfish or seen as selfish yet forgiving.
Yeah.
As you and I may have come across in spiritual traditions, it's referred to as being self-full.
Self-full. This is true.
That makes sense to me.
It makes more sense.
Yeah, I'm still reading.
Oh, you still got more to the selffulness?
Once we know about what encourages people to forgive, it becomes easier to create the conditions that increase the probability of forgiveness. For instance, researchers have discovered that the simple act of writing about the lessons learned following someone's transgression can increase one's willingness to forgive.
So in other words, you gotta write that. The lesson learned is like, don't trust that fool, and then you'll forgive him.
But I didn't hear the sentence. Can we hear it again, please?
Yeah, I think you need to come up with some better examples over there.
Okay, I'm just interpreting.
All right, I guess I need to read slower.
Or I can listen faster.
Please.
You can listen faster. I'm listening.
Guy in the back, please. Once we know about what encourages people to forgive, it becomes easier to create the conditions that increase the probability of forgiveness. Once we know what encourages people to forgive, it becomes easier to create the conditions that increase
Go ahead.
For instance, researchers have discovered
writing it down.
I lost my page.
Hard. Well, some of them have discovered that Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Yes, exactly.
Some have. And they know more about how to forgive.
You have to forgive Papa.
Researchers have discovered that the simple act of writing about the lessons learned following someone's transgression can increase one's willingness to forgive. Okay. The lessons learned following anyone's, I guess.
That's right.
Transgression.
And I write down, don't trust that fool.
That's
and
not the lesson learned.
Well, that's
is
the
it?
Lesson. Well, not really.
There would be more lessons. There would be more lessons. Or more complex
don't
lessons.
Don't trust people who wear certain outfits.
Or beanies.
Or beanies. Propeller beanies, specifically.
We can intentionally get people to focus on benefits and from this pull for forgiveness over revenge. Simple instructions such as these. Recently, someone did something harmful to you. For the next 20 minutes, we would like you to write an essay related to that harmful thing they did to you. However, as you write, we would like for you to write about positive aspects of the experience.
It's a tough one. I'm pissed off, but I'm going to stop for 20 minutes and write down, okay, the positive part is I'll never have to see them again because they're dead.
I'm with it. I'm feeling that sentence.
Okay, I'm with feeling
that. I got pushed in the mud, but I it was a cleansing kind of. Right.
The mud was good for my skin.
The mud was, yes. Yes, that's after very positive. Dried. Exactly, exactly. My first mud pack.
Yes. In which ways did the thing that this person did to you lead to positive consequences for you? Perhaps you became aware of personal strength that you did not realize you had. Perhaps a relationship became better or stronger as a result. Or perhaps you grew or became a stronger or wiser person.
Definitely you become a wiser person after someone transgresses you.
Yes.
Well,
hopefully.
Depending on your learning curve.
This is true. If you're lucky, you do.
I've been half stupid for parts of my life, and you know.
You see, matters of the heart are the hardest transgressions gain perspective on.
Well, we ain't going to talk about those tonight.
It depends on if it's part of your revenge story.
Well, certainly, and I can't tell that one on the air.
Okay, well, you could pretend nobody knows who you are yet.
Allegedly.
Go ahead, Mr. Guest.
As you write, explore these issues. In particular, please try to address the following points. A. In what ways did the hurtful event that happened to you lead to positive outcomes for you?
Okay.
That is,
I quit. No.
Yes, basically. What personal benefits came out of this experience for you? I left him. B.
Yeah. Okay.
In what ways has your life become better as a result of the harmful thing that occurred to you?
Mm.
In what ways is your life or the kind of person that you have become today as a result of the harmful thing that occurred to you better?
I just got to pause there for a second to say that I respect where that's coming from, but I definitely have to acknowledge that that must be really difficult depending on if it is a matter of the heart, let's just say. And you, is it positive to become skeptical and have less trust, you know, which often happens after some transgression? Is that positive, or does that just mean you're less likely to get screwed over in the future? Is that a good
like
thing?
Like you're developing a thicker skin.
Is it, or a better perspective.
And you're keeping people out of distance.
You become woke in that regard.
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
That may be pushing the term.
It may be pushing the term.
Have you noticed that Mike keeps bringing it back to that particular
topic? Well, I'm just thinking. Those are the things I'm thinking that are the hardest things to get over.
We're talking about you, not to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry. C. Are there any other additional benefits?
She heard me.
Benefits that you envision coming out of this experience for you, perhaps sometime in the future. Unquote. Yeah, I'll sue him.
Okay.
As you write, really try to let go and think deeply about possible benefits that you have gained from this negative event and possible benefits you might receive in the future. Try not to hold anything back. Be as honest and candid as possible about this event and its positive effects or potential effects on your life. You can intentionally design a work team so that people are more apt to forgive. The same goes.
A work team? Like.
Design a work team.
How does that integrate into your life? Like a work team?
Well, this is, the last section was about intentionally getting people to focus on benefits.
Oh, okay. So this
Simple instructions about what to write down after somebody hurts.
Group therapy instructors.
Yeah. So it sounds very much like it is.
Okay.
And,
I'm with that.
You know, also in addition to that,
but I'd like to have a work team in my life.
They're
working on that for me.
You can intentionally design a work team so that people are more apt to forgive. I think that's
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's like a work culture thing or something.
Like same, a corporate culture, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Same okay. Goes for an athletic team or neighborhood. That's sort of like a team culture thing, mm-hmm. Right? We don't need a designer. We need to be willing to design our world in an intentional way. It is a given each of us will be hurt multiple times with the potential for deep psychological wounds. Mm, many of us are part of the walking wounded. Mm. Instead of trying to prevent the presence of pain, we can be more effective and efficient by cultivating a better tolerance of other people's mistakes. For more, add these to your reading list. Natural Conflict Revolution, published by University of California Press, Berkeley, by F. Orelli and F.B.M. DeWall, from 2000. Beyond Revenge, The Evolution of the Forgiveness Instinct, from Josie Bass in San Francisco, by M.E. McCullough, 2008.
All right, well, we don't need the whole bibliography, but
no, those are two things. You know, you can look up Natural Conflict Resolution. It's a book. And then Beyond Revenge, The Evolution of the Forgiveness Instinct. Also sounds like a book. Forgiveness and conflict resolution? It's an alternative to revenge? I don't know. The whole positive spin on something that hurts you.
Well, it's become necessary to say that this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
Con quien? ¿Cómo se dice? Mike Sargent?
To cry each time we meet, walk on by, walk on by, make believe that you don't see the tears, just let me grieve in private, cause each time I see you, I break down and
there are three men in a boat with four cigarettes but no matches. How do they manage to smoke?
I'll stay at the bar.
Try the emergency channels. Picture Mr. Sadek.
Slow to one half impulse power. Let's be friends.
Slowing to one half impulse power.
Reliant in our section, this squadron, sir. And slower.
Sir, may I quote General Order 12 on the approach of any vessel when communications have not been established?
Lieutenant, the Admiral is well aware of the regulations.
Aye, sir.
Is it possible that comm systems fail?
It would explain a great many things.
They're requesting communication, sir.
Let them meet static.
They're still running with shields down.
Of course. We are one big happy fleet. Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold? Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us to be big?
There are three men in a boat with four cigarettes but no matches. How do they manage to smoke?
Snowball in my hand, and I was going to hit Harold with the snowball. See, so Harold was coming down the street. I was laughing to myself. I don't know how funny Harold is.
I'll stand far. I'll stand far.
He always says,
I'll stand far.
I'll
stand far.
What you want to hit me in the basement with snowball, bro?
I'll stand far. I'll stand far. I'll stand far.
Snowball in my hand, and I was going to hit Harold with the snowball, see. So Harold was coming down the street, and I was laughing to myself because I know how funny Harold is. See, every time you hit him with a snowball in the face, blop, he always says the same thing. He says, "Hey, man, what you want to hit me in the face with a snowball for, man?" You know, and I just laugh. So I'm just waiting for a man. I got this light, fluffy snowball, you know, ready to hit. And that's the rules of the game. You cannot hit a kid in the face with a slush ball. Slush ball is, it has ice and water and gunk all in it, you know. And you can't hit a kid in the face. You cannot drop in it as open galoshes either because it sends him home. You're, hey, what do you want to drop in the galoshes for? You know. So, I'm tickled to death, man, because I know it's a plop. Hey, man, what you want to do? And he's about 3 feet away, and I raise up to hit him. Some say, pow! On the side of the face, and it was stinging. And all the juice ran down in my underwear and everything. And it was ice all in my ear. Somebody hit me on the side of the face with a slush ball. And I looked around one eye, and there's old Junior Barnes just laughing. Cosby, I got you good. I hit you real good, didn't I? And I said, hey, man, what you want to hit me on the side of the face with a slush ball for, man? And I picked up a snowball and I threw it at him and I missed him. And he started running. I said, Junior Barnes, you come back. And I chased him. I threw another one at him. I couldn't catch him. And I cursed at him. I was so mad. You donkey! You stink! Junior Barnes, you gun! Come back here, I'll punch you right about. Hit somebody in the face with a such ball, let all that stuff go down in your underwear. And I didn't even care. I just sat right down in the snow. I was so mad. And it started to melt. Right through my four pair of corduroys. And I didn't even care. Because I know when I go home, the only thing my mother is talking about, you dummy, how come you sit down in the snow and let it just melt right through your four pair of corduroys? Yeah, Mom, well, what do you care? That's all you care about. Somebody sit down in the snow and let it melt right through your four pair of corduroys. You don't care that Junior Barnes hit me in the side of the face with a sledge ball and let all the gunk go down in my underwear. Because if you didn't care, you'd go out and get him. I'm going to get Junior Barnes. I'm going to get you, Junior Barnes. Boy, I'm going to get you. And I started to make a snowball for Junior Barnes. I made a snowball and so round and so perfect. It's got a little name inscribed. It says, Junior Barnes. And I went out looking for Junior Barnes. Junior Barnes. You gunky. Oh, Junior Barnes. And I couldn't find him. And it was 7:30. I have to get home before the monsters come out. And I took that snowball home and I put it in the freezer. And I waited. July. July 12th, my birthday. It was 104 degrees in the shade. Not a snowball in sight. Junior Barnes was sitting on the steps in front of my house. I was standing there with him. I had gone to great lengths to prove to Junior Barnes that I was his greatest friend. Let him drink out of my orange soda bottle without even wiping it off. And old Junior Barnes just sitting there telling his little jokes. And I was laughing right with him. Junior Barnes, you are so funny. And I said, Junior Barnes, I'm going to the house and get an orange soda for us. You just wait right here.
you donkey. And I walked in the house and opened that freezer door, and my mother had thrown the snowball away. So I went back outside and I spit on him.
Positive look at revenge.
Positive look. I'm going to give out the phone number here, though. 347-335-08.
Let's get some callers.
1-8. Yeah, you can tell us your revenge stories. I'm waiting to hear the Shadow Co-host's revenge story. Do you have a good revenge story, by the way?
Oh, a revenge story?
Where you got somebody back?
I might in a week or two. So
oh, come on. No, 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 no.
I'll get back to you.
Oh, come on. That tells me that you're like, okay, sneaky revenge. Yeah, sneaky revenge.
No, I'm not.
Not this evening.
No,
sneaky
are you sure?
Sneaky revenge. Yeah, I know you have a good revenge story.
Oh, a good revenge story.
All right, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
You said earlier that you're a nice person. We've already established how nice you are.
No, I don't think I'm really a nice person. I think I have a big shadow.
You think so?
That I nurture and protect.
You protect your shadow.
I think I do. I nurture my shadow. Protect my shadow.
How do you nurture a shadow?
You leave it alone in the dark. You feed it, you know, every once in a while, a good sob story or something like that. And then, you know, you don't really deal with it. You know, you don't look at it and say, you know what, you're ugly as hell. But here's the positive side about you.
Is this in your book?
You know, if you want to nurture a shadow, you don't do the whole, what did I learn from your being so ugly? What did I learn about my being so bad? You know, you just let it be. Try not to be that way too often. Maybe really hold it down. Suppress it.
Hold that shadow down.
Put a lock on top of the lock, on top of the padlock, on top of the combination lock.
And then every now and then you feed it?
Every now and then it gets hungry, wants to burst out of every place where you've left it alone.
I've seen the shadow.
You've seen the shadow.
I've seen this shadow.
You've seen the shadow and you've run away from it.
Ah, you know.
Straight to the little twinkles
of
light.
What can one do in the shadow of the shadow?
Well, I think others leave the shadow alone as well.
I want to know if you have something you want to reveal, Shadow Co-host.
I have a question before we go there.
Sure,
that,
sure.
Can revenge be immediate?
Immediate?
Revenge can be immediate. Sure can.
Oh, yeah. I
sure
think it's
can.
Fighting.
Flipping the bird. No. What is... Okay. Why are you...
Well, you know.
Immediate revenge. Interesting.
I am from the city of Los Angeles, where we drive.
Yeah. Road raging.
Claro, Casey. Funny you should bring it up.
Yeah, I saw because some tonight, course. Too.
Oh, tonight here in the city?
I saw some in the city here tonight. Saw me some road rage. Got me a bird.
What's your thought?
What did you saw?
What did you saw?
I seen some car coming up.
You seen some car.
Didn't like that I went around it.
Oh, you were involved, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
You were driving.
Someone was, some dude was practically ready to slam right into me.
Really? For revenge?
Instant revenge. Gave me the bird.
Instant revenge. Well, you know, instant revenge could be seen as just self-defense.
No,
don't you think?
Self-defense.
Yeah, instant revenge is self-defense, no?
Well, no, not necessarily.
Okay, tell me when instant revenge is not self-defense.
She brought up road rage, and indeed, that is what my story was about.
Okay, I'm ready.
I used to have a really bad problem with road rage. So I'm from LA, as we know, as some of us know. And I had this, you know, I'm not a big dude, but I'm not a small dude. And, you know, at the time of this story, I was bench pressing 300 pounds.
Mm.
You know, me and my boys was gorillas at the time, you know. I'm not, certainly not anymore. However, I had a road rage problem. So people would do something. It had to be intentional, or it had to be life-threatening.
Yes.
If they cut me off and almost had to run off the road, or they did something intentional to me, then they had to deal with me. And they didn't just have to, it wasn't flipping off. We was getting out the car and dealing with each other.
Okay.
Out the car. That's more responsible than chasing someone down, trying to ram into someone when there are, you know, 100 cars ready to pile on top of everyone on the highway.
You may not have that opinion after I'm done.
Okay.
I'm going to take the next guy who tries to ram into me, and I'm going to invite him to the shoulder of the highway.
Right. So, well, I would do this thing. I had my own move. So I realized, you know, that...
Your own move, like as in like a karate stance? Or like what do you mean your own move?
My move was this. After the thing happened that I just described, if someone had... intentionally
transgressed. Yes,
I would pull my car. I would get in front of them.
Transgress in a vehicular way,
and that's correct. Because people feel safe with 2,000 pounds wrapped around them. But once you get out of that car, we got some different things to do.
Gotcha.
The 2,000 pounds ain't there anymore. Now we got to deal with each other.
Mm.
So, I would get in front of them in traffic, and stop my car close enough to them that they couldn't go around me. And then I would get out of my car, and I would go back and ask them questions. You know, I know not to make any threats because I'm not as stupid as the Cholas say. Boy, this may not be a good story to tell.
No, I want to hear the question. The question,
and I would say, don't you
the
know?
The question is, you feeling lucky, punk?
And no, the question would be, haven't you seen the news? Don't you know this is why there's drive-by shootings in L.A.? Don't you know this is why people get their behinds whipped in traffic? Like, what are you doing? And if you want to deal with me, come on, step out the car. We'll deal with each other. So they couldn't move. They wouldn't get out of their cars.
Of course not.
That would be the end of it. Move forward. One day I'm driving up Reseda Boulevard, which is a three-lane highway. Not a big street, but a big street. It's in front of one of the major malls in the valley. A guy in a giant SUV cuts me off. And we stop at the red light. I'm in the fast lane. He's in the slow lane. There's a lane between us
philosophically,
and I get out no, in philosophically I'm in a slow lane,
okay,
wouldn't have happened.
Right,
I've evolved since. This does not happen anymore. So let me be clear about that. So we get to the red light, with light stops. I get out of my car and look at him like, dude, what? And he like blows me, like waves his hand at me like, whatever. And I'm like, oh really, whatever? I do, let's do this. So he's in the slow, and I pull over in front of him and get in front, right in front of him. My boy leans over to his glove compartment and opens it up, and I can see it in my window. It's the first time that's happened. I'm like, oh, snap, something different is happening.
It's not a Bible.
No, there was no Bible there. No, it was not the Lord's weapon. So the cat reaches into his glove compartment, pulls something out, gets out of his car and sticks it on his side, whatever it is,
and walks up on me. Now, I've done this many times. The minute I look in the person's eyes when I walk up on them, I can see the fear. And I know they're already beat down. Like, if it gets started there, I can see the fear in their eyes. I've already got them. They're done. This dude doesn't flinch.
Of course, he had a fear eraser in his, on his side.
Yes, he did.
Oh, a fear eraser.
He's taller than I am.
Listen to me.
Fear. That's his remember, fear eraser.
People who have guns have a lot of fear.
Well, he's a,
not all of them, but a lot of them.
He's a middle-aged guy, taller than me, and he's very calm. Mm-hmm. He walks up to me like, what's going on? And I say, I didn't tell this part of the story. He cut me off, but intentionally on the road. I was going really fast, and he cut me off. And so I got in front of him. I was like, dude, I'm doing 60, and you cut me off. He was like, so? I'm like, so you cut me off? You know how the traffic flows? Da, 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 da. He goes, how about this? And I said, you know, you was doing this, that, and the other. Da, da, da. My boy whips out his wallet and goes, I'm a highway patrolman. You want to step up on the curb?
Oh, snap.
And then I noticed that what he'd actually put on his side was his policeman radio. My next thought was, oh my God, I'm about to get Rodney Kinged. I'm about to get Rodney Kinged. If he pulls that radio out, I'm getting Rodney Kinged right now.
And he's the guy with the in his glove box?
Yeah, but,
it's the same story.
What he'd pull out of his glove box was his radio, not a gun.
Yes.
He'd pulled out his police radio.
But it looked like a gun.
Oh, I didn't. No, I didn't. It never looked like a gun. He just took something on his side. And from the culture, when somebody puts something on their side, we assume, you know, it might be a firearm.
It was backup.
It was not.
Fear in us.
Yeah. So he's like, I see now, when he pulls his wallet out, I see the police radio that he put on his side. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting Rodney Kinged. And I start just praying, like, God, I'll never get out of my car again. Please just let this be over. This is the end of it. I've been doing this for years. I'm done. I'm never doing this again.
I'm moving to New York.
Yo, and my revenge story didn't work. It backfired on me. And that was the last time I ever got out of my car for road rage.
How many times did you insinuate a road rage shoulder side or curbside street fight in LA?
No, listen, I don't play. If I say it, I mean it. People in this city don't understand me because I mean what I say and everybody has an agenda. Nobody's really saying what they're talking about. And I'm always saying exactly what I'm talking about.
Really?
So I don't play.
You don't play?
No, if we get out of the car, I mean, we gonna deal with each other if we get out of the car.
How about women? Do you ever stop a woman?
No. Oh, wait.
And what happened?
No, I remember. I had a rule. I had a rule. Two things. Children in the car.
Get her number.
If children were in the car,
okay.
Never happens. If there's an elder involved, I can let it go. This is what really stopped it for me. I realized if it's an elder, I can let it go.
Yeah.
If there are children involved, I can let it go. Then why can't I just let it go every time?
That's an interesting angle.
Yeah. Anytime there was an elder, and if I ran up on somebody and it was an elder, I just kept it pushing.
You're
never.
They're going to be an old lady one day.
Yeah, like, no, they were an old lady already. So I just kept that pushing. That was, you know. If it was a strapping mantra. Young brother, you know, we could
just grit your teeth and say old lady and keep driving.
Yeah, well, that was my revenge story and it backfired on me, Mr.
Old
Host.
Lady.
That's a very fascinating story. I must say that's a fascinating story.
Let me tell you a little addendum to that.
Yes.
A couple of months later, I have another incident. I'm riding down Cahuenga Boulevard. Headed toward KP, I'm headed down, and it's a Mexican brother, and we have a little incident, and I open my car door. Our windows are down, and he looks at me and goes, and his hand is on his lap, and he goes, you don't want to do that. And I put my foot out the door, he goes, dude, you don't want to do that. And I realized he had a gun on his lap. And I certainly haven't had an incident since then.
I was going to say, yeah. All right. So you're like, you quit drinking.
That was the end. No.
You fell off the wagon for a minute.
No. Wait a minute. Listen, brother. Let me explain something. I'm from Southern California.
Yeah.
I never drank and drove because
when I say drinking, I'm just saying the road rage as a drinking metaphor.
My thought was always this. I'm black already. I ain't going to give him an excuse.
You know what I'm saying?
I ain't giving him another excuse.
That's a good name for the book, though.
Yes. I did not drink and drive ever.
It's a metaphorical drinking. Road rage.
Sorry, I got defensive.
Yes, but it's okay. I now know that you never drink and drive.
Orale.
is to you? What is the shadow? How would you define the shadow? To you, what is the shadow? How would you define the shadow?
As a student of A Course in Miracles, there's a term, ego. And The Course in Miracles says that there are two emotions, love and fear. And that love is to fear what light is to darkness. Darkness is not a thing, it is the absence of a thing. So you don't hit darkness by getting rid of the darkness, you get rid of darkness by turning on the light. So The Course in Miracles says fear is to love, the same as darkness is to light. It's a no-thing. It's a no-thing masquerading as a thing. It's simply what happens in the absence of love. So mental energy is there and cannot be uncreated. But when our mental energy is not used in the service of love, it becomes fearful. That which is not used in a righteous way, righteous meaning right use of the mind, mental energy and emotion that is not used for righteous purposes becomes neurotic energy, or worse, pathological energy. And that's what the shadow is. It's like an imposter self. You know, it's much like a cancer cell is a normal working cell that forgets, literally forgets its natural programming and goes off on its own. And that's what the shadow is, because psychologically and emotionally, we have that same kind of malignancy sometimes, where that which is meant to be used in the extension of love and in the service of love instead becomes used in the projection of fear. Now, what Debbie's work has always been based on is what theologically is known as the atonement principle. You know, in The Course in Miracles, Spirit says, I cannot take from you what you will not release to me. You cannot bring the light to the darkness. You must bring the darkness to light. And what that means is you can't just pour pink paint over everything and pretend it's okay. Whether it's the way the Catholics go to confession and admit their errors as they go along, or whether it's like the Jews on the day of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the holiest day of the world, where you admit to God all the sins of the last year, whether it's like an Alcoholics Anonymous, where you take a fearless moral inventory and own your own character defects and atone for them and make amends for them. Those are all aspects of that same process, which Debbie calls the shadow work, the idea that you admit that aspect of yourself. You don't dissociate yourself from the understanding of your own weakness. You own it, because all it represents on a certain level is unintegrated energy, a place in yourself where there was some trauma, usually in early childhood, where you were not loved. Something happened, if even for a moment. And in that place, it's like a knot occurred. And so today, in whatever place in your personality, you don't know how to stand forth with real love and get your needs met. So you go a little nuts in that moment, whether it's anger or reactivity or dishonesty or compulsive behavior. We have many different shadows in terms of the various forms of expression. And I think Debbie's right, and of course this was first inaugurated by Carl Jung's larger conversation, that we have a shadow. I mean, look at the world today. I mean, what could it be but a shadow self that allows 17,000 children to die every day of hunger on this planet? What but a shadow self could spend the kind of money that we spend on more thousands of nuclear bombs? I mean, what are we doing? What is war but a collective shadow? So I think that, like in all things, we begin the larger transformation by addressing the individual personal transformation that makes us different as people. Because only changed people will change the world. I think we've come to understand that. That's why, you know, the famous Gandhi line, you must be the change you want to see happen in the world, unless we change on a personal level. He said the end is inherent in the means. Angry people can't bring peace to the world. Unless I, as he said, become the change I want to see happen, then the change won't happen in myself or in the world. Thank you.
You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. All right, so you said there's more to the story that you didn't tell us.
Well, you know, just the punchline of that story was the way that initial story ended was, you know, when the guy pulled out his wallet, he said to me, I said, you know, I was wolfing at him like, yo, let's go. What up? You know, because when he walked toward me and he put that thing on his side, I was like, yo, we're going to scrap this time because, you know, everybody usually just runs. Like, he was, like, walking at me. He's the first guy that didn't flinch. I was like, we're going to scrap. Let's go. And then when he pulled out his wallet, he went, and I said all the stuff I said. He said, I'm a highway patrolman. How about you step up on that curb and don't start nothing you can't finish? And I went, aight. And he said, listen, you don't start nothing you can't finish. Get in your car, drive away from here, and this will be over. And I was like, all right, sir.
Got you.
I'm out. Goodbye, my love.
You forgave him.
Very much. To this day, I forgive him.
It was easy to forgive him, wasn't it?
It was easy to forgive him. And my incidents are over. Now I've evolved.
Now, what did you learn from that situation?
I have learned, breathe first. You can't run up on everybody. You know, it don't matter how bad you are. You can't run up on everybody. And
this is true.
And you know what? Everybody's doing their best. Just keep it pushing.
That's not true.
Everybody
is not doing their best.
I agree with that. I don't think
everybody's
many
doing
people
their best.
Are doing their
I
best.
I don't think everybody's doing their
Listen,
best.
Listen, but wait a minute. Think of it this way.
Yes, back to the
If they
belief.
Could do better, wouldn't they?
No.
No, I think no. They'd do worse because it's no. more fun.
Yeah, listen. We
I
get
disagree with
I have
that.
Some stories that will
why,
support
why,
that.
Why is worse more fun? Can you explain?
Okay.
What is
I
worse?
Can, I can explain.
And you know, there are different ways of what is it called? Qualification.
Quantifying that.
Quantifying.
Well, again.
Give one quantification.
I know math.
There's,
go ahead. You start.
There's good and there's bad. Well, I don't know math, and I don't know the right word for it either. But, you know, there's doing the right and the wrong thing. And then there's, what's the other thing that we're talking about?
The
good,
gray.
Bad and gray.
But who decides what's right and what's wrong?
Those who tell you whether you have false beliefs or not.
I'm going to give you a story. There is a great Richard Bach book called Illusions.
Oh, that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Well, you know, he wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull,
yes,
which
yes, he did.
Many people read in middle school or something.
That's right. And they thought, where's the bird?
But he hasn't...
So I like a little thicker paperback
yeah.
next time.
Well, this one's about the same thickness,
same
actually.
Of,
and it's called Illusions, and it's about a misguided messiah. A guy who is a messiah but doesn't know. And at some point in the book, to illustrate the point we're discussing,
yes,
a vampire comes up to him and says, can I suck your blood? And the guy goes, no, like, that'll take my life energy away. And the vampire goes, yeah, but it means life to me. Let me just bite you a little bit. It's not going to kill you.
Well,
let me just. And the guy's like, no, you can't bite me. That's not okay with me. But the vampire's like, yo, but that means life to me. And the guy has to make, no, you cannot bite me.
Yeah, I have to.
So what is good and what is bad?
Well, you know, it again, what is good is what is bad. And it all depends on perspective. Correct?
Perspective and agreement.
Agreement.
Well,
like,
well there
meaning,
is.
Meaning. Hold on a second. If you get a bunch of people to agree with your perspective, what does that mean?
Well, if you
mean?
Get yourself.
What does that mean? That means
yourself.
You get voted in office. All right. Let's hear why revenge is good for you.
Well, this is going to be good for President yes. Carrot Juice if we keep on this.
I think so.
Revenge
Listen,
is good
if
for
you.
You
get people to.
Oh, we have another story?
Yeah, we have another revenge.
Of course.
This is how revenge is good for you.
Okay.
Take this in.
Article,
not story.
Revenge is good for you. This is only part one from Psychology Today.
That's right. This is 4 years later.
From 2011.
They've studied humans more. You know, they just discovered a new organ. You heard about that, right?
I've heard about it.
Almost 7 years ago. It's from
Somebody
June.
Somebody told me an interesting theory on that.
2011. Recently, let's travel back in time to what was recently in 2011. Recently, the news has been full of popular accounts of high-profile villains being, quote, brought to justice, unquote. Family whistleblowing exposed Bernie Madoff's insidious Ponzi scheme, that bilked millions of dollars from unsuspecting investors. The notorious Osama bin Laden was finally located in his Pakistan hideout. The tribunal in The Hague continues to issue indictments for suspected war criminals. These events offer us an opportunity to hold up a metaphorical mirror and reflect on our collective notions of justice. Without boring you with a long discussion of philosophical ideas like restorative and procedural justice, I'd like to pose the simple question, is revenge justice? The reason I ask is because revenge has something of a negative reputation, despite the fact that some psychological research suggests it can be healthy. Certainly, there are cultures that believe that punishing offenders through fines, beatings, incarcerations, or worse, is perfectly acceptable as a form of setting things right. In fact, in Albania, there is a long and formal tradition of blood feuding that prescribes exactly the types of revenge that are appropriate or inappropriate in certain situations. When a government metes out a punishment, we call it justice, but when a victim or a person close to the victim does the punishing, we think of it as revenge and brand it as vigilantism. Although vigilantism has something of a bad reputation, it hints at a very natural human urge, the need to get back at people. Maslow didn't mention this his hierarchy of motivations, but it is as fundamental to our nature as thirst. If you don't believe me, then just recall the last time you played out an argument with your spouse in your head, reveling in your own best barbs, strongest counter-arguments, and ultimate victory. Let's start our understanding.
I've never done that. Have you ever done that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called self-talk. Let's start our understanding of revenge by talking about a feeling that often gets overlooked. It's called embitterment. We all know about basic emotions such as fear and joy and guilt. And there are less well-known and more complex states as well, and embitterment is a perfect example. Embitterment is a sense of having been let down or victimized, coupled with a desire to fight back, but because the person feels helpless, it leads to fantasies of revenge or aggression. Embitterment can happen, for example, in a long property rights feud with a neighbor in the aftermath of a marital affair, after a protracted dealing with an insurance company, and in just about any situation in which you feel like a victim. We have all, to some extent, had the types of fantasies that accompany embitterment. Sometimes they are about getting back at the jerk who cuts you off on the freeway, and sometimes they are about reclaiming your dignity from a verbally abusive boss at work.
Reclaiming your dignity.
Reclaiming your dignity. What is so interesting about these fantasies is that they are functional. They are not, as people commonly believe, the dangerous, aggressive tendencies of people who are too petty or too incapable of forgiving others. Nor are they immoral mental habits of people who are too petty to know right from wrong. Instead, revenge fantasies have been shown to have a number of psychological benefits. In one study, soldiers experienced more positive emotions when they had imagined the suffering of their superiors, who presumably had heaped some suffering on the soldiers in the post, in the past. At first blush, this may sound like vindictiveness, but the real lesson
is...
Wait,
I have to say here, though, for soldiers to have revenge fantasies against the superiors and harboring this frustration that fueled these revenge fantasies, wouldn't they then take it out? Like we just saw that video that popped up recently on social media where in Syria where they're shooting protesters and laughing about it.
I haven't seen that video.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm not familiar with the roundabout.
All right, I'm sorry.
I just don't trust video necessarily context. For my news. And, you know,
that's a good point.
You don't trust anything.
Well, what this reminds me of in that case scenario.
I'm listening.
Of a soldier imagining suffering upon a superior. You know, I'm not sure if it relates to a real life.
Well, everybody story. Who's had an ice hole boss has imagined them, you know, being roasted.
Yeah. Or like Full Metal Jacket, which is what I was going to say. You know, thinks me of. What makes me think of. Thinks me of. What the hell? Can I say hell?
Maybe you're speaking in Leprechaun.
Maybe I am. Thinks me of.
Thinks me of my pot of gold. Me thinks of it, and me feels good.
Good for you, and good luck. So, yes. In a second study, Marcus Denzler and his colleagues conducted an experiment in which participants who were presented with a hypothetical scenario describing a cheating lover were given the opportunity to fulfill a revenge goal by stabbing a voodoo doll. Doing so made them less, not
stabbing
more.
Was this a scientific thing?
Aggressive, yes, because their feelings of retribution had been borne out. So
I want to see that proposal.
I think I
see
need
the proposal to get
doll.
The financing to use the voodoo dolls
so that
being,
my
and all of it. I want to see the whole
voodoo. Can be borne
wonderful,
out.
Wonderful, my magic.
My retribution, my feelings of, I need a voodoo doll. In a third study, Mario Golwitzer and his colleague examined which aspects of the revenge fantasy are so psychologically tonic. Tonic, they say. The researchers
tested... Which revenge is psychologically tonic?
I like the voodoo doll example.
Would you like to have like a doll that you could...
I would.
Turn into people who you want revenge against.
Oh, I just need one for now. One is enough.
You only have one person in mind that you want to voodoo doll represent.
I might want a small collection of dolls.
Do you ever see that catching on within society? Like everybody, like, you know, having a voodoo doll, like it's like a therapeutic.
Let's not start it here. Our boss is a Haitian. This could take off.
Our boss.
I mean, let's be real.
Yes,
this is our boss. Researchers tested two candidate hypotheses. In the first case, victims might like revenge because they see an offender suffering through an unpleasant activity, such as having to look at and rate gross photographs. In the second scenario, the victims might find revenge sweet because the offenders actually learned their lesson. In this scenario, the offender knew that they had been assigned to the gross photographs because of what they had done wrong. The researchers found that it is not simply witnessing the suffering of the offender that feels good to the victim. The real power of revenge is in teaching a lesson, in the offender coming to understand personally that their actions were wrong.
Now, I gotta sip on that for a second. Teaching a lesson, that's the real, like...
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, that's got to be a consistent motivation for revenge. Like, when you were having your road rage...
Yes, sir.
When you got out that car, were you ready to teach a lesson?
I was ready to deal with them, whatever that took.
Okay, all right.
But usually, for me, that meant, you know what it meant.
That is a lesson.
Teaching them a lesson.
Hey, you know,
probably.
Next time
you're not
going to
cut anybody
off
again. Exactly. I'm teaching you a lesson.
You're
going to
get pulled
over. Listen, let me teach you something. Because you even said, to him, you realize I'm going 60 miles an hour. Da, da, da. It's like, you obviously don't know. and I got to teach you.
Well, yeah. You know, listen, Mike, I'm from the South, so we don't teach people. We learn them.
You learn them. Well, you
learn them. I was going to learn them.
I was going to learn them.
Left, right, you too, please.
Left, right, left.
Yeah.
All right, so please, Mr. Hiss.
So, yes, these studies present a new look at the old concept of revenge. Rather than being a sign of an unhealthy mind, it could be that the revenge fantasies play an important protective role for victims. To be certain, acting out a revenge and fantasizing about revenge are two very different things. If you find yourself doing the latter,
just taking revenge on people.
The latter was fantasizing.
Isn't that what the Punisher is?
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a comic book character.
I'm sorry,
blurred.
Please consult
You don't know about the Punisher?
I don't know.
How is it that you're in the show and you don't know who the Punisher is?
I know people, apparently.
I like that about it. She knows people.
Apparently, I know people. I know a lot of interesting things about people, too.
Oh.
Things that you might not want broadcast on the air.
But you could
learn a lesson if I mentioned a thing or two.
I bet
it could be revenge.
Could.
Each of you could learn a thing or two at my story hour.
Could we now?
Yes, you could.
Wow.
But to be certain, acting out a revenge and fantasizing are two different things. If you find yourself doing the latter, merely fantasizing, don't beat yourself up. You're perfectly healthy for fantasizing. Now, what about threatening, like what I was just doing?
Yeah, about
that? Hey, man, Shadow, I'm going to rat you out.
I'm going to reveal something.
Tell everyone all about that one night when...
When we were drunk and
you
said that I...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'll tell them all about it.
Let's go there.
This guy, I'll tell him everything else, too.
Fascinating.
Very.
Much to learn. As Yoda once said.
Let's learn him. And he learns. He learns your act. Can I say
something? You've said it three times.
Shh. I didn't pronounce this.
Put an H behind it, it becomes ash.
Story for you to read. I couldn't really. This story, the headline alone is all really okay. It's all really. It's right there.
It's my kind of distraction.
Okay. Your kind of distraction.
Mm-hmm. Now, which one do we do? Cracker cocaine.
Well,
is it always black people?
It is always black people. Well, cocaine now is, they don't mention crack anymore. Crack is, that's very late 20th century. Nobody says crack. I don't even know.
I'm sorry. I heard the term three times tonight before I got here.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah, but you heard the term, but you don't really hear about people on crack anymore. The epidemic is over.
Sure, but people are referred to as crackheads on a regular basis.
Well, this is true because that has become a lexicon within the you know.
A part of the lexicon.
Part
certainly.
Of the lexicon. Something we just say. You're a crackhead. Like, that means, you know, you burnt yourself out in some way.
Mm-hmm. I'm just offended by that photograph.
Oh, your friend, was the photograph okay? See, without a photograph, what would you have done?
I'm not sure. I can only respond to what I saw at this point.
So you wouldn't read the title. Okay, the photograph says a lot, but I'll just read the headline. Florida woman caught with cocaine in purse blames it on windy day, police says.
Well, it do be getting windy in Florida, okay, as they say.
A 26-year-old woman in Florida claimed that a windy day was the only reason cocaine was in her bag. Fort Pierce authorities stopped a swerving car in late March and questioned a passenger. I don't want to say her name because it'll go with the photo. The station explained police said an officer smelled marijuana, and while going through her car, marijuana and cocaine were discovered in bags in Posey's purse. Posey reportedly said the marijuana belonged to her. I don't know anything about the cocaine. It must have flown through the window and into my purse. And in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with saying that. I mean, you know, like, it wasn't me.
Well, you got to do something. And of course, folks, you're listening.
I had no idea that he paid him $130,000.
That's correct.
What's the difference between those two?
You're talking about Stormy and the wind blowing all at the same time.
All at the same time. Stormy. There it is. Like, what's the difference?
You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
It's invisible. But you can feel it. We should try and take calls. Some people were calling before and I didn't take the call. The phone number here is 347-335-0818. We've been talking about revenge. We've been talking about the dark side. We've been talking about whether it's good for you or it's not good for you. And did you have a story you were going to reveal to us, Mr. Guest?
Yeah, I haven't really been one to exact revenge upon people.
You've never exacted revenge,
I
ever.
I don't think I've
ever.
Really...
Not even as a child. 347-335-0818. You don't think you have?
No, not really.
Really? Have you ever fantasized about revenge?
That's probably why I haven't actually revenged anyone.
Okay, because you fantasize.
I have a rich fantasy life.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I do. And I have a nice amount of fuel for it. So that always helps. That always helps.
Now, having these revenge fantasies, do they actually help you forgive?
I don't think they do. I think they just kind of soften reality. To the point where, you know, for me personally, you know, I'll tolerate things that maybe I wouldn't otherwise.
But because you have the active revenge fantasy going on, and now let me ask you this. You have the active, strong, rich revenge fantasy life. Do you feel guilty about it?
No. No, and you know, I don't think so. I think, you know, there's... If the guilt should be anywhere, it should be on, you know, the other person I'm...
When you have to bother having revenge fantasies about.
Yeah, you know, that's the part who should be the guilty part.
That's the guilty party. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you doing? Who's this?
Okay, this is, I'm Osama.
Osama, okay, Osama. And Osama, do you have a revenge story or something you want to share about your shadow self?
I probably got a few. Is your show a continuation from the previous show that was on?
No, it's interesting. It's interesting that he was talking about the same topic. No, but he was. I had this show planned and it is not. I did. Okay. I got here and I was like, wow, look at that. He's talking about some similar stuff. So, no.
Exactly.
But in a way, it is a continuation. It was an unplanned continuation.
Thank you. Yeah, revenge. I probably got a few revenge. Probably light revenge. Let's into some issues.
Light Revenge,
that,
that's like the free app, right?
Say that again?
No, I said Light Revenge. That's the free app.
Yeah, yes. Okay. I got into some issues at the workplace. You know, the person got a little bit rude and boisterous in front of people. And, you know, I was kind of like, whoa, took me back. I thought we was okay. And I kind of said a few things, but I backed up. I kind of, you know, I didn't want to get into a physical thing because I didn't really want to lose the job. And I went and reported it, and they came down on the person. And the whole vibe of the person changed towards me after. So I think that that's kind of a little revenge.
Okay, that's some positive revenge. And what did you learn from that transgression?
What did I learn?
Yeah. Report people when they bother you.
With the rope. Say that again.
I said report people when they bother you. No, what did you learn?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Don't go wild. I mean, I could have went there. I was like, come on, like in front of everybody and the guys acting all. And I thought we were okay. I was a little taken back by it. Like, what I learned is that people show you one thing, but they act another way. This guy, we would travel together and everything. He took me back with that. He told me he had been wanting to say something to me about the job thing, and I was like, "What? We ride the train. We talk." Yeah, so I was taken back. People betray one thing, but their inner feelings are something else.
Yes, no, I can totally relate to that. When somebody reveals an inner feeling, and you have a choice, you can either let it go and say, okay, let me file that to know that this is who this person is, or you can do something about it, like you did.
Right. And then the fact that he kind of wanted to get a little physical, too, and we were still at the job, and I was like, what?
Was he drinking or what?
Was he what?
Was he drinking?
Nah, I don't know what he's showing off. You know, maybe he's got some mental issues. Maybe he didn't take his medication. You know, I don't know what it was. You know, I don't know people. You know, I can't pick him. All I know is, you know, I wasn't going to let anything happen to me. But just people, you know, they show one thing and do another. Mike, you remind me of a guy who used to be on there. He's not on BAI any longer. And I always... I think his name was Harry Allen. Did you know him?
You know, it's funny because a number of people have mistaken us. I've had people call me on my show and say, hey, Harry Allen. And I don't really know Harry Allen. I mean, I've known him here at the station, but we've gotten mistaken for each other on each other's shows.
You remind me of him in similar topics, kind of like he was in the music, kind of like he, you know, your vibe. You kind of remind
me. I got that Harry Allen vibe. Yes.
You got Harry Allen, yeah, but you
no, we should probably do a show together. It'll be like talking to each other. Mike, Harry, Mike.
But now, you used to get the free tickets, right?
Yes, I did.
Movies and all that? Yeah, I remember years ago, I went to some free stuff you gave.
Well, I thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Life is like science fiction.
Yes, it is. Even more so now than ever before.
but I enjoyed the guy's road rage in California.
That's quite a story that the Shadow co-host told there.
Was that karma, though, you think? Was that karma? Was that a good
Well, you know, my take on it is that is life talking to him. You know, sometimes things happen to you to prepare you for what's coming next. You know, you may see it as something... You know, as Mystery Guest was saying, you know, there is a lesson to be learned here. If something happens, you know, if you learn, then you're going to grow. You're going to mature. You're going to evolve. You know, so
he, exactly.
As he said, you're more evolved now.
You keep getting away with things. You know how you keep getting away with things, Mike? Like you keep winning, like, and then one day you lose, and you say, "Wow, what happened?"
Well, you know, I gotta say that's now you're talking about some stuff now, because I can equate a lot of things to that. I think there are a lot of things that you can equate to gambling. You know, that they are a gamble. You know, they're a gamble, and as long as you've been winning, you keep getting, you get over. Eventually, you're undone by your overconfidence, which is what I think will happen to, you know, our fearless leader.
Mike.
What?
Mike, do you think revenge is good? Is that okay? Like, people always say, oh, you shouldn't be revenge. You should forgive people. And I'm not of that yoke sometimes. Sometimes I do like revenge. Mm. And I'm like, hey, they did me wrong. I got to get them back.
Well, Mr. Guest says that the revenge is good for you. Isn't that right, Mr. Guest?
Yeah.
And Mike, my last point is, did you see the National Geographic issue on the newsstands, the black and white special issue?
No. Well, which issue? No, I didn't see it.
It's a special issue on the newsstands right now. It's a black, look at a little girl, and it looks like a white little girl, but they're sisters. They're twin sisters, and the whole issue is about black and white, like all over the world.
Yes, I heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Okay. You haven't seen it, though. Okay.
Surprise in the age of Trump that should be the focus. A black and a white child.
Well, you know, it's interesting that all of this happening now, there's a lot of irony. We're living in a lot of irony. It is ironic to have the most racist, sexist president we've ever had, you know, or had in our lifetime. And this is the time of, you know, all these, you know, the best-selling superhero film of all time is a black superhero. And there's the Me Too movement and changing this dynamic. So it brings to light, you know, it was really my father who pointed this out to me. You know, I remember when everybody was upset about the Trump and, you know, people, and you say, oh, Dad, what do you think? And he's like, well, I think it's a good thing. I said, what do you mean it's a good thing? And he says, well, it's bringing to light what's always been there. People are waking up, a lot of people, you know, and the more I thought about it, you know, do you remember, like, 2 years ago, they were saying that we were living in a, now, I say this to say that,
post-racist society.
I didn't say that. No black person believed that, but they used to say we're living in a post-racial. Nobody says that stupidity anymore.
We're in a current racist society.
Exactly. We're in a deeply racist society. But nobody says that we're living in a post-racial society, because, you know, just having it's sort of, we're living in the backlash of having even thought we were living in a post-racial society. That's where we're
looking. It's amazing. You go by Trump Tower now, 57th Street and the 5th. They've got the guns and everything.
Oh, I know. I saw it. It's
something.
We were having a good time.
Yes, we were having a good time.
Must we go there?
No.
Let's go back to the good time.
Mike, what's the Attorney General's name out of Alabama? What's his name?
I'm not sure. Mr. Guest?
Oh, I forget.
I give up what?
No, I forget his name. It's not Orrin Hatch. It's somebody else, but he's something else. Wow. That guy's a mess.
Well,
he's on the cover of Time, too. I did see him. What's his name? He has a southern drawl and all that. He's, you know, when he talks.
Well, there it is.
His name.
There it is. All right, I'm going to take a test. I want you, I have a test for both of you, the mystery guest and the shadow. This is a test. Are you aware of your shadow self? You ready?
All right.
Okay. When it comes to, and this is, you can answer first because, you know, you're the lady. When it comes to sexual fantasies, you, A, believe there are certain things that are totally unacceptable to fantasize about. B, are aware of certain fantasies or dreams you have that contain unpleasant images, but try not to think about them. C, believe that your bad fantasies probably relate to feelings of low self-esteem, but you enjoy using them when you're alone. Or D, reassure yourself that you're only human. And while you know that acting out some fantasies is wrong or harmful, sharing them with the right partner could enhance your sex life.
Wow. I have to choose one of these things?
Yes, you do.
For every day of the week? Just one?
This is just when it comes to sexual fantasies. That's the question.
Well, yeah, I mean... All right, the first one...
Believe that there are certain things that are totally unacceptable.
Okay.
Two, are aware of certain fantasies or dreams you have that contain unpleasant images, but try not to think about them. C, believe that your bad fantasies probably relate to feelings of low self-esteem, but you enjoy using them when you're alone. Or D, reassure yourself that you're only human, and while you know that acting out some fantasies is wrong or harmful, sharing them with the right partner could enhance your sex life.
Where's E for other?
There's no E. There's no,
there
you gotta
should
pick
be an
one.
E.
There's no
I,
E.
I'm
you gotta choose
pick one. I'm not gonna pick two. I'm
come on.
I'll probably pick four.
Okay. Here we go. Let's see.
I'm D2.
You're D2. Yeah. Okay, there it is.
Yeah, I'm also
D2. He's your robot friend, D2. All right, here we go. You find a certain colleague at work very irritating and feel intolerant of the slightest thing she does. This leaves you feeling, A, annoyed that you have to work with her. How did they let her pass the interview? B, bad for having such negative thoughts, so you avoid her as much as possible. You prefer to like people and for them to like you. C, determined to start focusing on her positive qualities. After all, she might be funny and kind and as well being a moody drama queen. You might even end up liking her. Or D, intrigued that this person's presence sparks such a strong reaction in you. Do any other moody drama queens spring to mind?
Yeah, I think I'm just a D-type person. When there's no E option for...
You're D, okay.
Is there anything
you're
this person
intrigued.
Does?
This person is, okay.
You know, adding value
to society? Should they be snuffed out?
No,
is that what you're saying?
Okay. So it's a business setting, so it's a business question.
That's what you need context to answer that properly. Is that what you're saying?
Please, never mind. Okay. Just go over there and make some money.
Yeah,
for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that sounded like three. All right. This is question three. There's only six questions. And then don't think I'm not going to ask you because I already think I know some of your answers. Okay. Question three of six. A friend gives you some honest feedback on why she thinks your last relationship didn't work out. You feel A, misunderstood. This person has clearly not been paying attention to what's been going on. Maybe they're not such a good friend after all. B, terrible. You know they're right, and you feel disheartened that you have messed things up yet again. C, grateful. You lap up feedback. After all, those closest to you usually have a much better idea of what's going on. Or D, comforted. A lot of what she says makes sense and comes to no surprise, but you realize that some advice is colored by her own experience, and you take it with a pinch of salt.
I don't really agree with this questionnaire because there is no E, all of the above.
No.
There's no F, none of the above. There's no
G. You're going to go for D.
G.
So you're comforted that
blank.
These people like you and continue to be your
comforted.
Friend, even though you have these kind of stories. Okay, so...
No, I'm saying all of the above.
Well,
I didn't say
no.
D on that one.
All right, well...
I said E, all of the above.
There's no E, all of the above.
Well, there is now.
No, there
isn't.
Thank
you.
Okay, I gave you D.
Next question.
I gave you D. All right, number four. When you were a child, your family pigeonholed you in a certain role. For example, rebel, sensible, serious, or dippy. Now, what the hell is dippy anyway? Okay. Now you've grown up and they still do it to you. You A, agree with them. You even play up to the role. After all, it reflects your life choices and people generally don't change. B, berate yourself for still acting out the role with your family and get upset when they rub in how you haven't changed. C, admit that although you used to be this way, you haven't actually done anything rebellious, for example, since you were 19, so isn't it time they updated their view? Or D, question whether you actually ever had this quality. Maybe it just suited your family to pigeonhole you in this way.
Do you want to just spin a wheel for me? Because I don't necessarily
relate
strongly to either.
You know, I should have asked the shadow co-host. Okay.
So, do you
berate yourself? Do you agree with them? Do you admit it, or do you question whether they're right or not? Like how your family saw you. This is a practical question. How did they see you? Were you like the big-eyed? Cherubic.
All right, please.
Family cutie.
No, thank you.
So.
No, I don't have an answer for this question.
Oh, come on.
I'm not getting one.
I can't get any kind of answer
nope.
for that. All right, I'm going to go back then. I'm going to go to you, Shadow Co.
Thank you.
No, you're not.
Yes, likely. I am. Yes,
not
I
on
am.
A social media quiz. You're not.
This is a social media quiz.
I will
is...
not be party to your witchcraft.
Man. See, he was. See, the yes. You were already on D on everything, weren't you, sir?
I was on
the phone. Yeah, the guy on the phone.
Oh, I see.
That last one. Yeah. That would be the last one. Your family sees you, but yeah, I take it with a grain of salt. I'll be like, yeah, okay.
Gotcha. So it don't mean that much to you. All right. Well, I can't get any love. I'm gonna say thank you for calling, because I'm gonna see if we can take a couple more calls. Multiple calls.
Keep it a good one. What was that song you was playing? Was that Dionne Warwick?
Yes, it was. Just walk on by. That was a remix. That was a remix, of course. Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was nice.
That's what we call DGM. Nice. See, around the time when the marathon comes along, I'll put it on the compilation. You'll be able to get
Do that. Do that. Yeah, well, but that's some of your old stuff. I need a current.
Yeah.
I
do it every season. All right. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Great. Revenge. Got it.
Revenge. And you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, the name of the show.
Alone is not enough, actually. Sigmund Freud said intelligence will be used in the service of the neurosis. There are many people walking around with a lot of quote-unquote awareness of their issues. But as we were saying earlier, that of itself doesn't mean that their issues have been or are being transformed. Now, the second thing you asked was, why do we need a shadow? Now, from A Course in Miracles perspective, we don't. Now, that's quite different. I'm not sure about Debbie, but I know with Deepak, he prescribes to a kind of dualistic worldview where you need both. A Course in Miracles is more the image that I said earlier, that darkness is merely the absence of light. But according to the Course, light is all that is. And because light and love are the emanations of the mind of God, and the mind of God is all that there is. So the Course says that when we are not thinking with love, we're actually not thinking at all. We're hallucinating. And in a way very similar to Buddhist philosophy, the thinking of that is not compassionate is illusion. It's just the Maya of the world. We don't need it. And the great enlightened masters are demonstrations of the actualization of the potential that lies within us all. To be all love, all light, all radiance, all compassion, all the time. I don't think, you know, Jesus or Buddha or Moses or anybody like that would say, well, I need the darkness to appreciate the light. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you a question. Have you learned more from negative things that have happened in your life or positive things? Or would you say it's an equal thing?
I've never tried to quantify. I can't answer that question.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you then. Let me rephrase the question. Would you say some of your most dramatic or powerful lessons have come from something negative or something positive happening? Most transformative.
You've
never quantified it.
Really haven't thought of it in those terms.
Okay, all right. Just put it out there asking.
Both have been impactful, but I can't say one or the other has done more or less. Because I know that both have been incredibly impactful in my experience.
Well, all right, let me ask you as an East Coast, West Coast person. What do you think... What part of yourself are you able to explore differently on the East Coast than you can on the West Coast, just in terms of lifestyle?
Wow, I don't have an answer.
You don't have an answer? How can you not have an answer?
Like, I'm confused by this coast. I'm completely confused.
All right.
I you know, I'm confused. I just don't know. I know how to operate in, on one coast, and you know, here, let me give you my example of what confuses me about New York.
Okay.
It's rush hour. Getting on the subway. You can knock an old lady aside to get on the subway, but once you're on the subway, you got to get up and give her your seat. Like, when are we supposed to be respectful?
Yeah, like, that's kind of true.
30 seconds ago?
That's
right
that's,
now?
I have to say that.
I'm struggling to navigate that still.
That's
like where I come from, I would always give that older lady the respect, that access. However, when I arrived here and got into the subway station, I would step aside and let an elder get on the train, and they would knock me and the elder aside.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's like, wait a minute. What?
Yes.
So navigating that is interesting. Okay. This is not West Coast, East Coast, really. This is about my being Southern more than it is about the West Coast.
Okay. All right. That you I know, can believe.
That's what that's about.
Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Hey, who's this?
I guess you can call me X.
X. All right, X. Now, X, do you have a revenge story you want to share with us?
A real deep one.
Uh-oh. I'm ready. I'm going to even turn down the music for you.
You guys are having a great conversation.
Are you enjoying the show?
Always, Mike, always, you know.
I'm glad.
Guys got the DGM and the conversations and little sexy thing and the, you know, your
mystery guest.
There you go. I couldn't find the words. Thanks.
I understand.
Where should I begin? All right, let me start with some friends growing up in the neighborhood when we were kids in the 60s. You know, we're 10 years old. You know, when you first get to grow with your friends, lots of gangs all over the neighborhood, you know, Ghetto Brothers, X-Boy, Dragons. Anyway, you know, we're growing up in a block, and as you grow older, you know, you're thinking that this bond you're having with your friends is, you know, something that gonna be loyal, you know, in some way. You know, you're gonna maintain that. And, you know, life teaches you different, you know. As we got older, power, you know, well, you know how the streets were in the 80s and 90s, especially, you know, bullets flying, drugs, well, that seemed to get in the way of things. And, you know, one of the guys was, well, not just one. I have two best friends. And what's funny about this thing is that, well, not funny, but you could call it that because, you know, life, as you say,
life is like science fiction.
There you go. Thanks again, Mike. Anyway, my both best friends, one, as we grew up, his brother, you know, money, you know, into the game, really ugly. That seemed to get in the way. My other best friend, you know, because, you know, he was one of those guys that's like your friend you stated a little while ago, that, you know, when people ran him off the road, which I can understand. I've gone through a little something like that. As probably most people, at least some people anyway, he wouldn't back down, you know. He had a name in the street. But this power and the drugs, and this guy had a crew of people that just take you out. I mean, that's all they did, was take people out. And, you know, as you read in the newspapers, it was in the Bronx at one time that had, you know, the highest deaths in that year, and then this precinct. Anyway, it came to a point where it seemed like Nassim that he had trouble, you know, that they wanted to step on certain places where he would be in the way of that, you know, because he had a crew, my other best friend. And so the word got on the street that they wanted him out. And what's crazy is, like I said, his brother was my best friend also. And the word got to me that there was a hit on him. You know, and the way he told it to me wasn't like, you know, like letting me know to tell him. It was more to tell me for me to be safe. So in other words, he left it up to me whether I should warn him or not. Because when he told me, he said, yo, I guess his brother had told him, you know, something's going to go down and don't go over there to the game room or whatever, you know, the corner. You know, he told me, yo, stay away from that corner. So I knew not to be there. Now, I had to make the choice, you know, in front of him to see if I was going to tell him or not. Anyway, you know, of course, I try to do the best thing I could to avoid all this thing, but anyway, got to him, let him know, and he kind of challenged it and told his people that he had heard that, they were coming for him. And he told them, yo, if I hear it's true, I'm going to come for your family and your people and all that. Anyway, 4 days later, there was a money deal going on. They told him to go to a place where he was less expected that anything like that would happen. And that's where it happened. They went and got him. And I had to decide, you know, because like I said, he was my best friend. And I had to decide, how do I go about getting the guy that killed my best friend, even though my best friend, that's his brother that did it. So I'm going to hurt people on all sides. It was a hard choice to make, but...
So what'd you do? You got revenge.
Yeah, I wanted to do it the ugly way, the same way they did it to him. But it was like almost an impossibility because he wouldn't come around, and it's not something I wanted to do, but the anger and the pain, you know, you just want to, you know, get even, as you, you know, as you were stating, teach a lesson, you know, like, so I went a different route, because since all those murders were going out in the street and all of that, I got to use 501. Because they were trying to get people on me. They were just looking. So they came up to me and they knew I knew them. Because at one point, you know, I knew all the people and I had been working for a lot of them anyway.
So you dropped a dime?
No. Because see, that's another thing I had to think about. I wasn't going to testify, none of that. So I had to come up with a plan. I had to tell them something that only we knew or they knew, but nobody else knew. So when the cop, somebody got arrested, one of their people got arrested, or two of their people, I should say. So two of their people, not the main guy that I wanted, but two of their main people that worked for them. Like I said, they had a lot of bodies in the neighborhood, you know? Like, for instance, there was a guy that used to live on my block that I believe his sister was a cop, and they had all the cars insured under his name. When the shit started getting ugly, they just took him out. So they won't have to deal with that. So that's why I'm telling you 5-0 was on it. And this ain't no regular 5. The cop's name was Joe Ponzi. You look that up, you see that he was the guy that was after the mob and all that. Joe Ponzi, anyway, made a deal with him. know, because, you know, I said he was out there trying to get me, but I wouldn't go that route. So I told him I would help if he would do something for me. And I would do whatever it took, but I, you know. So told him a story. Like I said, two of my friends got arrested. They didn't know that.
I understand.
How could he know? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you got to listen. Just so you know, you can't curse on the air.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't even realize I did that. Anyway, they didn't realize that, you know, the guys didn't know that Joe knew, you know? So when they sat them down in different rooms and he told them something that was real ugly, which was a hit also, that they had done to some people, which were innocent people. But that hit went to try to hit another, you know, I think the lady's son was a drug dealer, but he wasn't there, so they just wiped everybody out. Anyway, I told them that story. So when they put the two guys in the room.
So they both went down, they both went to prison?
Right. One thought the other one was telling because they're going to figure out how he knows.
Right. So they ratted each other out is basically
exactly.
What you're saying.
Exactly. And gotcha. So then they started getting one by one by one. And, you know, that guy was really voraciously, you know what I mean? He was, because he had a lot of money. I mean, millions. I know because I used to count his money.
All right. Well, that's pretty long and deep revenge story. And this is X, huh? X, how long have you been listening to? I said, you call yourself X. How long
because I didn't want to say the name. That's
I understand. I understand. You want to protect the innocent. And how long have you been listening to the show?
A few years, man.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. I hope you're going to pledge when the marathon comes along. Are you going to pledge?
Thanks.
All right. Is that a yes? You're going to pledge?
Of course, man.
Right. I just want to make sure. You know.
Definitely. You know, WBAI definitely gets all the love, man. All
right. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
And you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio. WBAI. 99.5.
There were dreams that may be shattered now, I know, but it seems that we can.
I do have a question for you, Shadow co-host. There's a story I had here that I found somewhat fascinating because we've talked about this a little bit. And this is from Live Science. It says a third of young millennials are confused about this uncontrovertible fact in that the Earth is actually round. Have you heard about this?
Certainly. You know, it's interesting if you look around. It turns out that hundreds of millions
flat earth
of people are discussing or debating that topic, Mike, and oddly we haven't heard about it much on this station.
No.
But it's become so popular, this debate whether or not the earth is flat or round. Oddly, and even though that we were taught in school that when Columbus sailed this way toward our land,
yes,
that he thought the earth was flat. That was a lie they taught us.
Okay.
That is not true. Indeed, we have maps that show that during those times, people thought the earth was round. So they taught us that lie in school. I don't know why.
That's interesting. I was taught that, too. I was definitely taught that.
Yeah, but in fact, they did not believe the earth was flat. They knew the earth was round, and the maps depict such from the era.
So then what's your take on why is it today that this has taken off, that the earth
why it's taken off today?
Yes, I mean this article tells some things, but I'm
why don't
I'm curious.
You read the article?
I'm gonna read the article.
Let's start
but
there.
I want to get your thoughts on what it says here. That only 66% of 18 to 24 year olds in the U.S. are confident that the world is round.
66%?
66%. The findings don't necessarily indicate an epidemic of flat earthism, as only 4% of the 18 to 24-year-old group said they actually believe the earth is, the world is flat. Rather, they seem to be a relatively large number in this age group who are willing to entertain doubts. 9% said that they always believed the world was round, but were recently having doubts. 5% said they'd always believed the world was flat, but were becoming skeptical of that conclusion. And 16% said they just weren't sure. Flat Earth philosophy has been around since the 19th century, but has recently blown up online, particularly on YouTube and Twitter. Believers post videos and memes arguing their case for a flat Earth, and positing conspiracy theories that explain away everything that makes it clear that the planet is in fact a globe. And they say that the flat earth believers, it goes on to say, it's hard to pin down precisely how many flat earth believers there are. The first flat earth conference in the United States held last year drew a crowd of 500, according to its organizers. The new survey conducted by U.gov, drew respondents from an online panel of 1.8 million residents of the United States and questioned 8,215 adults, and the results then weighed to represent the demographic of the U.S. population. Overall, the results suggest that 84% of Americans believe the world is round. 5% say they always believed it was round, but have recently become skeptical. 2% said that the world is flat. Another 2% said that they always thought the world was flat, but recently became skeptical. And 7% weren't sure. Is that, you know, Mr. Guest, what's your...
Well, I'll tell you what strikes me from what you just read.
Yeah.
It is that you said people believe. Belief requires faith.
Yes.
Can they prove what they believe?
Well, therein lies the rub. I mean, whatever it is we believe, most religions are based on some faith you cannot prove, except that that's part of the culture.
Well, that's true, Mike. But indeed, we also can't prove that gravity exists. Gravity remains a theory.
That's true.
Gravity is a theory. And indeed, Mr. Newton wrote a book about as tall as I am and never finished that book nor the equation.
This is true.
So there is no actual proof that gravity exists.
Well,
wait a minute, let me finish my point.
I'm with you.
So it takes as much faith to believe in gravity as it does to believe in religion.
This is true too. Okay.
I thought gravity was a law.
We all did until we learned that it's a theory.
It is a theory.
It is not a law. Gravity is a theory.
It is. They don't really. There's no.
There
real
is the theory of gravity.
Gravity
is not a law. No. But we've been taught in school that it was a law.
But there are laws of gravity, like that govern that theory.
Are there now? If it's a theory, how can there be laws?
Well, that's what.
Because if from my perspective, and probably the perspective of the people you're talking about, to believe in a theory requires faith.
This is true.
Any theory. To believe in any theory requires faith. So it's no different than religion. To believe in a theory requires the same faith it requires to believe in a religious theory that God exists, created the earth in 6 days, and that's a theory.
This is true.
Gravity is also a theory, and it takes faith to believe in either or.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah,
and what were you going to say, Mr. Guest?
I feel like gravity is a law.
What you feel like is insignificant. What is,
well, I feel like
is.
When you Google it, you get law, not theory.
Whether you Google it or not, and it says law, there are many other sources that you might check, scientific sources, which will outline for you that gravity is indeed theoretical.
It is. Put theory of gravity. Put in theory of gravity in Google.
I'm seeing gravity is most accurately described by the general theory of relativity.
There it is.
Theory.
That's near it.
Did you say theory?
No, gravity is most accurately described by
a theory. By a theory. So,
it takes faith to believe in a theory, as I established a moment ago.
Exactly.
Gravitation now, and law of gravity redirect.
Right.
But it's described best described by a theory.
Who knows
it is.
Who's editing some Wikipedia page somewhere? Well,
regardless of Wikipedia, we're not talking about Wikipedia. Let's go to Newton himself.
That's true.
Which I started with. Newton never finished the equation.
Well,
it was
like
unfinished.
That.
It's an unfinished equation.
It's also one of those laws that they say that we another law.
I do know about it. I've studied it for a couple of years.
That we cannot go past the speed of light. That's also a law, but they just did it.
And yet, there is no speed of light. We've been taught that light is a constant.
Yes.
That's incorrect. Light is not a constant.
It's a pulse.
What's actually happened is scientists have agreed on an average. Light flows between this speed and this speed, and so we've agreed upon an average. The speed of light is not a constant, as we've been taught. The speed of light has, in fact, been agreed upon by scientists based upon an average.
And it's been broken now, that speed.
Proving that that also was not a law.
Exactly. That was my point.
Though we were taught such.
Well, again, there's a lot we don't know.
I'm just so sick of everything right now. So, theory, law, whatever. Contract, testament.
No, those are pretty important terms. I don't think we can dismiss them that easily.
No, they're pretty important. I just feel like everything is falsehood sometimes. So why bother?
I certainly...
Everything is perspective, and he said, and... She said, and you know,
that's different than we're talking about science.
Why?
He said, and she said, it's not the same as science.
I'm just sick of science, and it reminds me of everything else.
I see,
I understand. Hello, you're in the air.
Hey, Mike, it's Thrash.
Thrash, hey, what's going on, Thrash?
Hey, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with your second mystery host because there's a difference between scientific theory and layman's theory. When I have a theory, it's just a supposition. It's my opinion. When a scientific theory is reached, it is a law. It is not theoretical.
Wait a minute, but you said theory, right? If it's theory, isn't
it
a theory?
The word theory, as used by scientists, means actual, proven, peer-proven law.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
So when we say that gravity is a proven law? Are you suggesting?
Gravity is a proven law.
And can you back that up?
Look up scientific theory as opposed to a layman's definition of theory. When we say theory, yes, just as people out in the in society, we're not talking as experts who have had our ideas, our suppositions proven by other people on other continents, and hopefully even better, people who want to disprove us. That's how scientific theory works. That's scientific law. Scientific
So you're saying the words theory and law are interchangeable?
Theory as used by a scientist means it's a proven law. It is a fact.
So I'm going to ask the question
right now,
again.
It may change in the future when new information comes to us because science is always changing.
So laws change? Wait a minute. So laws change in the future. Is that what you're saying?
As people get new information, yes.
Laws change. So it's a law one day, but it changes later. And it's still the law?
If you want to parse words...
No. Wait a minute.
No, as a group, as a society, when we have knowledge of something and we accept this as such, it was a law at one time that the sun revolved around the earth. It was proven wrong. So that's what happens. Right now...
Who?
Right now, we believe gravity exists.
We who?
Scientists.
Well...
I'm talking, you got to separate me and you saying theories and
right ahead.
Albert Einstein and Planck talking
theories. We lose the caller?
Excuse me?
He was talking to the mystery guest. Finish what you're saying, Thread.
Ah, sorry, caller. We lost you there for a second.
No, I'm here. I'm good.
He's there. You guys can't hear him now for some reason?
We're back.
I'm here.
We can hear him again. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I got you guys.
All right.
So, yeah, like just as I was saying, you know, it's two different definitions, and we can't conflate them. That's how creationists try to say that evolution is just a theory and hasn't been proven by other anthropologists.
So your suggestion is evolution is not a theory and has been proven?
Evolution, yes, it has been proven by as I said, peer-reviewed processes.
But I thought there was a missing link.
Yeah, but just because you have a missing step in a ladder doesn't mean the ladder, you can't climb the ladder.
So even though something's missing, it's been proven.
Again, if you want to parse words, scientists...
No. Can you answer the question? I'm talking about parsing words. My question is, even though something's a theory, it's been proven...
Scientific theory has been proven. Look it up in a dictionary. You don't have to believe me. Check my sources.
All right, I'll look it up in the dictionary. I have it in front of me right now.
The scientific use of the word theory as opposed to a layman's theory.
All right,
the
here we go.
The theory of creation as opposed to the theory of evolution.
The theory of the creation theory as opposed to the theory of the Big Bang.
The theory of the Big Bang, yeah. They've just tracked gravitational waves that prove that explosion happened.
Okay, so here's what theory means, according to dictionary.com. A coherent group of tested general propositions commonly regarded as correct that can be used as principles of explanation and prediction for a class of phenomena. Definition number two.
That would be gravity.
Definition number two. A proposed explanation whose status is still conjectural and subject to experimentation in contrast to well-established propositions that are regarded as reporting matters of actual fact. From my perspective, those two definitions are oppositional to each other.
Yes, I agree with you.
Well, then I guess we've reached nothing.
Huh?
Then I guess we've reached nothing. We have two definitions of theory.
No, you've just proven me right. Okay. Because the first one is the scientific use of the word, and the second is the layman's use of the word, the unproven use of the word. I have a theory that I can fly, but if I jump out the window, I'll probably be proven wrong by the theory of gravity.
So we have one word that means two different things.
Yes, it does.
And
It is what it is. What can you say?
I can say we have one word that means two different things according to the dictionary definition.
And I agree with you
100%. That's what we can say. And that makes no sense. And I mean, and if you think about it in your own mind, and here's one of the things that I was going to say earlier about the conversation that we were having was we are taking the stories that we were reading, Psychology Today articles, we are taking the words of so-called experts versus what we can experience ourselves as human beings. And from my perspective, what we can experience is far more valid than what those folks were saying. And in the context of tonight's conversations about revenge and this, that, and the other, you know how you feel. You don't need an expert to tell you how you feel when you get revenge.
This is true.
We know as human beings what that feels like. We know the result of what happens. If we take the action or if we don't, what the different results are. We don't need people to tell us that. What is experiential for us versus what we've been told? These dichotomous definitions of this word frighten me. As an English speaker, I'm like, well, what is the word? One says yes, one says no. Which is it? Well, and we have to question that.
Yeah, but if you question the theory of gravity and think it's unproven,
I know that it's unproven theory. Because I'm sorry, Mr. Newton didn't finish the book or the equation. That's a fact.
Yeah, well, sometimes it takes people hundreds of years later to finish a math problem.
No one finished it. Mr. Newton didn't finish it, nor did anyone else.
I'm talking about mathematics and science. As people learn,
so am I.
Get more information. As we were talking about,
but they do. I agree with you there. You are 100% correct. However, in terms of the theory of gravity, that didn't happen.
Well, it depends on what you mean by. I mean, if you're going to get into mathematics of it, I'm not a mathematician, so I'm not going to.
We don't have to talk about math. What we're talking about is whether or not Sir Isaac Newton completed the theory of gravity, which he did not.
Oh, well, that doesn't mean that there isn't a theory about a phenomena called gravity that has been proven over and over again.
There's a theory about God, but that doesn't mean that it's real.
But is that scientifically proven?
Nor gravity certainly isn't, nor is God. Neither is proven.
No. Oh, no. You're absolutely wrong. The fact of gravity has been proven over and over again by Galileo and other scientists. If you drop something, it will go in a certain direction.
Is that not density? I could give you three other explanations for why things fall to the earth right now.
Feathers fall to the earth just like cannonballs do. There's a different density.
However, I can give you three different explanations currently for that are not gravity. Three different theories, rather, that are not gravity. Three other theories. And my question would be, and we don't have time to go into them now. The show is about to run out, but My question would be, why is gravity the theory we teach when it's a theory and the others are also theories? Which of those theories, density being one of them, which of those theories is correct?
Well, I've never heard of the theory of density.
You should look that up.
Well, I will look it up, but the theory of gravity, I mean, like you're saying, sometimes you use your experiences. That's an individual thing. Scientific
density is a scientific theory as well, not individual.
But what I'm saying is, when you're talking about that, you're talking about an individual process. Scientific theory demands that individual process be repeated by many individuals in different places under different circumstances. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're not really arguing with me. You're arguing with the majority of scientists who, you know, use the scientific theory.
That is correct. But I'm a person. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But I'm a person of this perspective. If you're going with the mainstream, you may be going the wrong way.
Oh, yeah, I question things all the time, but, you know, I'm not questioning the roundness of the Earth. I'm not questioning the heliocentric nature of our solar system. I'm not questioning other theories like evolution.
Those are different than gravity.
What's G-force? What is G-force?
Gravity force.
Okay, so gravity is a force.
Wait a minute. We are taught that gravity is a force. We are also...
It's a quantifiable force.
We're taught that.
Defined with an equation.
And there are different scientists who argue that indeed it is density that causes things to fall back to the Earth rather than gravity. That's only one theory that is in opposition. So gravity is a theory. Density is a different theory. I could name two others. Currently, I won't. Again, we're about... close to the end of the show, but we should look at these theories together and observe which is which. And again, this is
the law of gravity online.
Well, you know, online
I must not be a good researcher.
No, you'll have to read a book online. You can't trust. You'll have to start reading actual books.
Can I download a book online?
It doesn't matter if you can or can't. You can find one in the library.
That's right.
If you head to the library.
Do you have a library card?
You have a library card?
You have a library card, Mr. Kiss?
I'd suggest you use it.
With optical character recognition.
Optical
character. You can tell who you are just by looking at you.
Read books. Forget online. Remember, anyone can edit Wikipedia.
I have optical character recognition. I can spot a character a mile away.
Some books do contain information that has been disproven.
This is
true.
That are
still in print.
You mean the Bible? Is that what you're talking about?
One of, possibly.
Well, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. The name of the show is Night Shift. You can listen to us every Monday from midnight till 3 a.m.
That was a joke about the Bible, yeah?
Yeah, that was a joke about the Bible. And we joke about the Bible and reality here on Night Shift. And you can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. We've got shows going back for over 10 years. And you can visit us on Facebook, NITESHIFTZ. I'm sorry, NITESHIFT. Our Twitter is NITESHIFTZ. But I want to thank the shadow co-host for being here. Did you enjoy yourself?
Not really.
Not
Man.
Did you enjoy yourself, Mr. Guest?
Oh, just a tiny bit.
Just a tiny bit. All right. What about you, Thrash? Did you enjoy the show?
Claro, que sí.
Oh, you got to have a great show. And, I mean, a couple of the songs, I can't tell you how many times I was searching. I couldn't find them.
You got to wait for the DGM. There it is.
Isn't there great music on this show, man?
Always, always. And really great, great conversation, too. Great sparring with the mystery co-host. We both have the same first name.
Well, thank you for participating, Mystery.
Well, that's right. By the way, Mystery Guest, you missed it when you stepped out. Caller called in to say how sexy you were.
Oh.
Just so you know.
Mystery Guest?
Oh, really?
Yes, you missed it.
Are you sure it wasn't just one of your deranged fans?
Well, I didn't say that he wasn't deranged, but he did think you were sexy.
Oh, it was a man.
It was a man.
That's interesting.
Yes. You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio.
WBAI New York. This is 99.5 FM.
And this has been Night Shift.
Night Shift.
Until next week.
Night Shift.
Good night, Mr. Guest.
See you sometime.
Thank you, Shadow Co-host.
See you around.
De nada.